Welcome to Jaguars This Week, presented by Aetna, with the voice of the Jaguars, Brian Sexton, color analyst Jeff Lagerman, and Jaguars.com senior editor Vic Ketchman. Jaguars This Week, presented by Aetna, is brought to you by Ticket Exchange, Community First Credit Union, Carey Limousine, Wachovia, Sonny's Barbecue, and by Everbank. Jaguars This Week begins right now.
Hey there, good evening. Welcome to Jaguars This Week, presented by Aetna. I'm Brian Sexton, joined by the senior editor of Jaguars.com, Vic Ketchman. Hey, Vic, how are you tonight?
I'm fine, Brian. How are you?
I'm good. Joe Fortunato is alongside. Hi, Joe. How are you?
I'm lovely. And you?
Very good. And Jeff is not here. His chair vacant. He's sitting in a stand somewhere hunting in, what do we call it every year, defenseless animals?
Mm-hmm.
Hunting defenseless animals up in Georgia. But it makes him happy, and so we're happy that he's happy.
Yeah, I guess. I'm not happy for the animals.
He thinks
die.
They're tasty.
I mean, as we said last night, I don't know why you got to go kill them.
He eats a lot of venison in his household, so he's up there replenishing his freezer. Meanwhile, for the next 2 hours, Vic and I will talk with you about the Jaguars, about the National Football League, whatever's on your mind, so feel free to join us. 800-355-NFL1 if you're in our calling area. Drop the 800, just 355-6351. Twitter is up as well, at Jags Voice, and away we go. But before we do that, we'll remind you that, have you driven past a shopping center? They don't waste any time.
What?
On Monday, the day after Halloween, Christmas decorations were
Is that right?
In front of the Stein Mart on Atlantic Boulevard there at, I think they called it Harbor Town. Anyway, so folks, it reminds me that if you're shopping this holiday season and looking for a department store style but yet discount prices, look no further than your neighborhood Stein Mart, 6th Jacksonville location, Stein Mart. More fashion, less prices. Joe endeavors to grab the first phone call of the evening.
You want me to get that?
I do. Thank you very much. This bit of news. Comment on it if you feel like it, Vic, and I believe that you will. Two players up on the waiver wire today. One was Sean Merriman, who was claimed by the Bills, the Dolphins, the Buccaneers, awarded to the Bills. And the other is a guy named Randy Moss. And all the speculation on NFL Network all day comes down to, and I was a little surprised by this, the Tennessee Titans.
Mm-hmm.
At number 21 in the waiver wire order, have now acquired Randy Moss. So a couple things come to mind, and I'll let you go on them. The one thing is Kenny Britt hurt his hamstring.
Mm-hmm.
He's become a deep play receiver, a guy they drafted out of Rutgers a couple years ago. They were saying he's out for a while. Maybe grabbing Randy Moss and his $3 million salary signals that it's a real long while, and that's why they went for this one.
You got Randy Moss. He was horribly disrespectful and abusive to food caterers in the Vikings locker room area, I guess, recently.
Yeah, last week, last Friday.
And I guess so badly was his behavior in Minnesota that they decided to take the risk of getting stuck for a $3.4 million hit on his salary. For instance, if he had cleared waivers, the Vikings would have had to pay the remaining $3.4 million on his salary for the rest of the year, and he could have double dipped somebody. He could have, if he had signed, let's say, a few days from now after he cleared waivers, if he had signed a free agent contract with the Titans, he could have gotten $3.4 million from the Vikings and whatever he negotiated in a new contract with the Titans. So here's a team, the Vikings, that is in bad financial condition to begin with and was going to suffer tremendous embarrassment in cutting him for having done this deal in the first place. But they were willing to forego all of that embarrassment and that financial loss just to get him out of there. Just get him out. I don't care what it costs. I don't care what the embarrassment is. Just get this guy out the door. Yet another team was willing to bring him in their door. And I don't get that. And I got to tell you, I've lost a lot of respect for the Titans, and I've lost a lot of respect for Jeff Fisher on this move, because this isn't what good teams do.
I'm surprised that Jeff Fisher did it, other than for the obvious injury reason, although I still don't know that merits doing it. Because, you know, the Titans haven't been the Raiders in their career. They've mm-hmm. grown their own players.
That's right.
And if they've had a malcontent, Adam Jones, they've gotten rid of him.
Lendell White,
yeah,
too.
Yeah, I mean, Jeff Fisher has always, and people in Jacksonville obviously don't care for him at all because he's flippant about it, but the guy has been a very solid football coach through very difficult
times.
Yeah,
and their organization, you're representing it correctly, too. Their organization has not been a fly-by-night franchise. It's not been a bad boy bunch there. They have, when they have had troubled players, they have shown them the door. That's been a real solid. In fact, I
even letting Albert Hainsworth walk.
Yeah, exactly. I have a real high opinion of the Titans organization. They've done a fabulous job selling themselves in that community as an expansion franchise to the community.
Sure,
or as a relocation.
Yeah.
Franchise, but when you put
to them, it was expansion, new name,
and new name. Yeah, exactly. The whole bit. I really think that is a standard bearer type of franchise. That is a beacon for the NFL in new small market type of places. And so, where did this come from? I mean, just out of nowhere. I mean, they get stuck with a guy I think is a turd, and I'm not sure he can play anymore either. So I don't get it.
Do you think? And you may have just answered this question. I don't believe that this all of a sudden gives you concern for playing the Titans again. I mean, on any given play, obviously, you know, he could beat you for a touchdown, but I don't think he's the same player. And so if I'm Indianapolis, Houston, or Jacksonville, I shrug my shoulders. I say, that doesn't affect me.
You've got a quarterback who is very fragile in terms of his behavior, from what I understand.
Vince
Young is a problem. You run a tremendous risk here. Randy Moss could decide to take Vince Young under his wing. All right.
And that would be a problem.
And you've got a real problem. I mean, you've got some characters in your locker room who could get left of center very, very quickly. And Vince Young immediately comes to mind. And they've got some other ones too who could go left of center. Cortland Finnegan, could go left of center. He's already left of center. Yeah. He could go farther left of center very quickly. I think the Titans are taking a major
risk.
Chris
Johnson, another player.
Oh, there's no question. Absolutely. In fact, Chris Johnson would be the number one candidate because he's disenchanted with his contract.
And you've got a guy in Randy Moss that at one time took a safety and a corner with him, but I don't know that he does that anymore.
Oh, no. He's just a guy now. I mean, he's not. He won't go over the middle. The only times he's catching passes now is when he's the recipient of a pick play.
Here's the thing, too. From an organizational standpoint, you have one or two bad games and they decide to cut him. Now they're on the hook for the rest of the salary. I mean, it seemed like way too big of a risk for the Titans to make.
When did Vince Young get the arm to get the ball to this guy?
Yeah.
You know, this one loses me. Now, who knows? Jeff Fisher is our outstanding coach, and he has a way of making things work, but this one leaves me. You know, I just don't get it.
You know, and if you turn on the NFL Network, and I've had it on, here's what the hype machine, and not just that the NFL Network is the hype machine, ESPN is guilty of this too. They hang on to some of these guys way beyond their ability to play. If you watch the video that they're showing on NFL Network today, you would believe this guy is still the guy who ran and caught the three touchdowns on Thanksgiving Day in Dallas in 1998. I mean, they haven't even shown the video of him the last couple of weeks where he's kind of just sauntering up the sideline.
Yeah, well,
the hype machine has him as an impact player.
What we do know is this. The good franchises are the ones who stay clear of this stuff. The good franchises are the ones surround themselves with good young football players and guys who, and they don't necessarily have to be solid citizens, but they've got to be solid teammates.
Right.
Solid teammates. Randy Moss has never been a good teammate.
Nope. And he is now a Titan. Speaking of good young players, Eugene Monroe would qualify. Chris joins us from the South Side. That's on his mind tonight. Hello, Chris.
Hey, how are you guys doing this evening?
Good. How are you?
I'm doing well, thank you. I think Randy Moss, that guy's poison. It's probably a mistake. It's a surprise Jeff Fisher would have anything to do with that. But back to the Jaguars. Normally I record the game on the DVR so I can watch back through it, but this week the DVR didn't seem to operate. If I remember, I think it was somewhere in the middle of the second quarter, Garrard took a sack. Guy came around the right end, and around on his left side. Mm-hmm. I think it was Eugene Monroe gave up on a block. I think it put us like third and 22.
Yeah, it was Victor Butler was the guy that beat him. He whiffed on Victor Butler.
It looked like he gave up on that block.
Well, I can't remember that, but he whiffed on Victor Butler.
It's
called oversetting. And if there is a flaw in Eugene Monroe's game, it is, as it has been described to me, it's that he oversets. Now, what that means is his feet get too active, and he goes out to get the guy instead of just sitting there and letting and catching him. He gets too wide, and will get outside, and the guy will come inside.
Well, and Jeff talked about this the other night on All Access. You have too much respect for a player. For DeMarcus Ware, yeah. I mean, you're going to have to be aware that that guy can really beat you to the
right.
outside. But for this guy who came, you know, a backup, he's number 72. I can't recall his first name.
Well, I'm talking about is 57.
Oh, okay. I was talking about 72.
Okay.
But he overset, and he didn't need to because this guy didn't have DeMarcus Ware's speed. But, you know, talking to people around the building, other than that particular play, they thought he played solid.
Yeah, I mean, DeMarcus Ware only had a quarterback hurry. That was the only reason he was
sacks.
Yeah, that's the only reason he was even on the final sheet, the final stat sheet. So Monroe was judged to have had a solid game.
And Jack told me, just got done taping his television show, that they couldn't, by their game plan, give Monroe help all the time that he saw DeMarcus Ware.
They brought too many people.
Exactly, and you had Mercedes, and he's just too big of a weapon to leave into block. Mm-hmm. And so as a result of that, there were some one-on-ones, and they thought that Monroe played pretty well.
Yeah.
He's not been dominant yet, and I think that's what people are waiting to see him shut guys down. I don't know how far he is from that. I mean, that's a matter of finishing, according to logs.
Well, you know, he got whacked by Trent Cole.
Yeah, the Eagles game was not a good one.
And when these guys have a bad game, it tends to stick with them. But this kid is a fine player. He's going to be an outstanding player for a long time.
All right, we appreciate your phone call, Chris. We need a break. Guys, we go. Season ticket holders, use your Jaguars rewards card. When you purchase at least 10 gallons of Gate gasoline, you'll get $2 in Jag Bucks back. For details, go to Jaguars.com. We'll roll along. Brian Sexton, Vic Ketchman, Joe Fortunato, you if you care to join us. 355-NFL1 on News Talk Radio, WOKV. Depend on that.
To talk to Brian, Jeff, and Vic, dial 355-NFL1 or 1-800-355-NFL1. Now, back to Jaguars This Week, presented by Aetna on News Talk Radio, WOKV.
We can test drive the new 2011 Ford Super Duty, the new 2011 Ford Mustang, or the all-new Ford Fiesta when you visit your local Southern Ford dealer. Sexton, Ketchman, Fortunato, no log him in this evening. Phone lines are lighting up. 355-NFL, 1-800-355-NFL1. Hold tight, folks. Joe will get to you when he darn well feels like it, as he's told me this evening. I love you, Joe.
The lights are pretty.
Yeah. He's mesmerized by them. The weekend in the division.
Mm-hmm.
Houston at home against San Diego.
Mm-hmm.
The Colts on the road in Philadelphia.
Mm-hmm.
Let's deal with the Colts in Philly first.
Mm-hmm.
They were at home. They beat the crud out of the Houston Texans.
Mm-hmm.
I think because the Texans didn't come in and pound it like they did on opening day. I just don't know that Peyton Manning can be as effective throwing to Jacob Tammy and Brody Eldridge.
Mm-hmm.
Dallas Clark, I think, is a huge loss for them.
Mm-hmm. I think both the Colts and the Texans are going to lose this weekend. I think the Chargers found something last week against the Titans. I think that they
it's about the time of year where they start to come off.
Yeah, exactly. I think they've reached their saturation point of defeats, and they realize that it's time to do it or you know what. And,
well, you know, in two more weeks they're going to get Vincent Jackson back,
mm-hmm.
and so they'll be better.
And so I'm expecting San Diego to continue that second half surge that they had against the Titans. And And I think the Texans right now are fading. They're vulnerable. I'm not saying that I don't think they can get it back together, because I saw some things Monday night that I like from their defense. They do run to the ball. They do hit. They look like they've got some pass rush and some defenders. But they right now are searching for an identity. I don't think they know who they are.
Well, and how much does it hurt to lose the guy that most people think is their best consistent defensive player, D'Amico Ryans, in the middle?
Yeah.
Now you got Brian Cushing playing out of position.
Oh, I thought he looked awful Monday night.
Yeah, he plays out of spots in the middle there now. And, I mean, everything kind of worked because D'Amico ran the defense.
Yeah, I thought Brian Cushing looked Frankensteinish. I thought he looked slow and awkward. He didn't look anything like the player I saw as a rookie. And, of course, I know what that's suggesting.
Well, yeah,
but
that
he's off the juice, and right. He's not the same guy, and it's probably the truth. If you saw the pictures of him before and after at Southern Cal, I mean, you get a pretty good idea.
Just Google it. You can see it.
Yeah.
Brian Cushing before and after. You'll be amazed.
And so, I, the Colts, I'm with you. They looked real, real good on Monday night, but they're going up against a Philadelphia team on Sunday that has some weapons that can possess the ball. I don't know who do we know who the quarterback is going to be for Philadelphia?
I think this is Vic. I think he returns from the rib injury, and Andy Reid said it was going to be his gig again.
Michael Vick is the perfect quarterback to have against the Colts because there's no pocket. There is no spot to rush. He's going to be all over the place. So all of a sudden, Mathis and Freeney don't have those pass rush lanes, you know, meet at the quarterback. There's no meeting at the quarterback when you're playing against Michael Vick because you don't know where the quarterback is going to be. He really negates their pass rush, which is their strongest suit other than, of course, Peyton Manning. The Eagles have the running game with LeSean McCoy to dominate time of possession. They've got, a quarterback who's going to move the pocket. And they also have the pass rushers, and the Colts' offensive line is looking real bad. I mean, Manning now is starting to get hit. They've got Trent Cole, and they've got the guys, the blitz packages, to put some heat on Manning. I'm looking for the Eagles to beat the Colts, and I expect the Chargers to win, too.
Which would make it interesting, then, because at this point now, you've got 5-2 Indianapolis at the top, 5-3 Tennessee, who's off this weekend.
Which would leave Tennessee and Indianapolis tied at 5-3.
Right, and then you'd have Jacksonville and Houston tied at 4-4.
Bingo, and Houston coming here. Of course, people are saying, you're just being a homer to the Jaguars, that's what you want to see happen. No, I really believe that. I really believe that the Colts and Texans are going to lose this weekend.
You know, I go back. The Texans started so strong. I mean, they pounded the Colts. Of course, they had all summer to get ready for them. Then they went and won that game in Washington. Of course, now we see that Washington's not all that. Mm-hmm. And then they got pounded by the Cowboys. That's the Cowboys' only victory.
Mm-hmm.
Now, having seen the Cowboys, it creates more questions about this Texans team that I think everybody thought, well, gosh, you know, they've got a quarterback. They've got Andre Johnson, who I think is the best receiver in the game.
Mm-hmm.
Owen Daniels is back.
I'm not sure about that.
Are you sure?
I think that's been given away a little too I think that's been awarded.
He's the leading receiver the last 2 years.
Yeah, but, you know,
the numbers are there.
Where are the big plays? Where are the great moments? I mean, we got receivers in this league like Larry Fitzgerald who have great big-time moments.
Well, true.
Where are they with Andre Johnson?
Well, but he hasn't really had a stage to do that yet. I mean, that club hasn't gotten to the Super Bowl. I mean, we're thinking of that playoff season that Larry Fitzgerald had where every catch was spectacular.
About a game here last year where Andre Johnson didn't show up until the fourth quarter. Mm-hmm. And I
remember that.
I mean, I've seen him have big games, but I'm going to get off the Andre Johnson bandwagon.
I'm not ready to yet.
And I need some show me now.
All right. Well, I'm not ready to yet because here's what I think.
You didn't show me much on Monday night.
No, but of course he had the ankle.
Mm-hmm.
He's had that ankle that's been lingering, and he dinged it back up again. So who knows where he's at on that thing. But here's what I remember about him most is that he goes over the middle, tough guy, doesn't miss it at all, can hit the seam route and beat you deep, 6'3", 220 pounds. The thing is, he's got the production to go with all of the measurables and intangibles that people talk about.
Let me tell you something. He ain't DeSean Jackson. You want a game breaker. You want a guy who is a difference maker. You want a guy who scares you. I mean, frightens the heck out of you when he's on the field. That's the guy.
Yeah, well,
Andre Johnson
doesn't
do that
to me.
It's
tough to argue with that. No, it's tough to argue with that. You're right about that. So that's the division, folks. News is next. When we come back, focus on the Jaguars. You can join us. 355-NFL 1-800-355-6351 on News Talk Radio, WOKV. Depend on it.
To talk to Brian, Jeff, and Vic, dial 355-NFL-1 or 1-800-355-NFL-1. Now, back to Jaguars This Week, presented by Aetna on News Talk Radio WOKV.
For Bueller Swiss Watch Company, proud to be the official watch of the Jaguars, you can get your Bueller Swiss Watch at Allen's Jewelers in Jacksonville, Robinson Jewelry Company up in Fernandina Beach, Faceted Rainbow in Ocala, Kingsley Jewelry in Orange Park, and Lords and Barons Jewelers in Tallahassee. Welcome back, Brian Sexton, Vic Ketchman, Joe Fortunato. Jaguars This Week, presented by Aetna. We'll go till 8 o'clock. Sans Lagerman, you want to grab a couple phone calls here?
Sure.
All right, let's do it. Let's grab Roger in Arlington. Roger, welcome to the show.
Hey, guys, how are you?
Good, thank you.
Hey, don't pounce on me too hard here, because I just want to ask kind of a general question. I'm not a real big football guy. I don't know the ins and out of it, but I know the Jaguars. Born and raised here in Jacksonville. I was 16 years old driving to the Jacksonville Bulls game when my family had season tickets back then, watching Ozonka on the sidelines. One of the things that I've noticed since this team has been here, and what kind of confuses me, is from the Coughlin-Brunel days to the Del Rio, Leftwich, and Girard days, is that it seems that the issues that the team has is consistent. We have a good week, then the next week it's the same problems that we have. Seems to me, as an uneducated football guy, the same problems that we have had from the very beginning. And my question is, when do you stop looking at personnel? When do you stop looking at coaches? And when do you look inside the office and say, okay, is there a problem inside the management office that is keeping these problems that this team is having consistent?
What kind of person inside the office are you talking about?
I don't know, Vic. That's what I'm asking you. Because we've got a new coach, we've got new quarterbacks, we've got new players, but we still, we're still the cardiac cats. We can't wind the game up in the first half. We can't wind the game up in the third quarter, and that's been consistent since this team has been here.
Yeah, but that's the NFL. You don't pull a Florida and beat Vanderbilt by 5 touchdowns at halftime here. Cardiac is every team in the league, Vic, says that cardiac stuff, and it's just the way it is.
Yeah, half the league is 4-4, I think. But let me go through the infrastructure of the team, so you get an idea of how a team is composed. At the very top, of course, is the owner, Wayne Weaver. The next guy down is the general manager, Gene Smith. He has a staff of college scouts and pro scouts, meaning guys who scout the professional ranks in Gene Smith's personnel department. Under him, then, is the head coach, Jack Del Rio, and he has his assistant coach, his coaches, his coaching staff, and, of course, his players. And then there are equipment managers, and there are medical people, training room people, trainers types, and then there are the finance people who are responsible for, well, it used to be the salary cap, but they're responsible in an uncapped year for contracts and for the procedural stuff, for instance, waiving players and claiming players, etc. There is a PR department. There is a ticket department. There is even a editor of the team website. And of course, I think we all know he is to blame. you go all the way, down to cafeteria workers and general office personnel. We even have legal. There's a legal counsel here, a guy who's responsible for all the contracts, looking over all the contracts. There's a sponsorship division, people who are responsible for selling, for instance, the naming rights to Everbank. And all the signage, et cetera. So, I mean, where do you want to point the finger? And I'm not trying to back you into a corner, but where do you want to point the finger?
I guess what I'm asking, Vic, is there somebody that's in the office that has the ability to hold somebody back or to keep somebody from doing what they want to do, or somebody that has a philosophy that they put on a coach or they put on the team or the players?
Yeah, there's one guy. It's the owner. I mean, he tell you, he's one guy who can tell everybody go jump off a bridge. I mean, he's the one guy who can tell everybody what to do. Gene Smith is in charge of personnel, all personnel decisions. He drafts them, he cuts them, he claims them, he trades them, but he don't play them. That's where the line is drawn, and Jack Del Rio takes over. So, yeah, I mean, there are disciplines and there are responsibilities within those disciplines, but what you're talking about is, you know, a grand poobah. You're talking about the one guy who can tell anybody in the place what to do, and, of course, that's the owner. Am I satisfying you, or am I not getting to the heart of the matter?
Well, I don't even know if.
Let me tell you what I think the problem is. I think you think of the NFL as though it's college football, and it's not. 4-4, frankly, is okay in this league. 4-4 is okay. At Florida, it's disaster.
Roger, we appreciate the phone call. Thanks for calling. 355-NFL, 1-800-355-6351. That's what I thought it was from the very beginning.
Mm-hmm.
You know, the cardiac stuff. Give me a break. I mean, what is the stat? That 78%, or maybe it's 87%, of NFL games are decided by 8 points or less.
Yeah, the game we just witnessed in Dallas is such an exception to the rule. There was a point in the second half that I felt like I was watching a preseason game. I was just unbelievably disinterested. That's just, I just can't, I don't want to see that kind of game. I mean, the Cowboys should be ashamed of themselves. Once the third quarter started and the Jaguars put the first score on the scoreboard in the second half, which made it 21-3, it was over. And I think there was like 12 minutes to go in the third quarter. So for nearly half the game, the issue was not in doubt. Now, there's some people who love that. They just revel in that.
Right.
You know, rub it in, rub it. Oh, yeah. You know, kill them, humiliate them. That's not me.
They think it's BCS.
I mean, I was so bored that I just kind of wandered around the press box.
Yeah, you know, Ryan Robinson normally puts this stat in the release, but it's the bye week, so he's focusing more on players. I'm going to go ahead and say it's somewhere between 78% and 87% of all NFL games are decided by 8 points or less. So if you're worried about the cardiac thing, it's the way that this league runs. 355-NFL-1, 355-6351. Lex is up next with an interesting thought on the Colts over in Arlington. Lex, welcome to the show.
Thanks for taking my call, guys. I love the show.
Thank you.
Just was curious. The Colts, who only have one win in the division, are considered to be the front runners for our division.
Well, that's because they have the best record. They have the best record.
So it's not really based upon division wins. It's also a combination of their overall record
right.
as well?
Yeah, of course.
The winner of the division, right, has the best record. When it comes down to ties, well, then you look at the division record. That's how it works. But remember,
okay.
we're also talking about Peyton Manning, who many people believe is the best player in the league, and a team that's won six consecutive AFC South division titles.
We're 16 years in this, right?
Yeah. Yep. Still educating. Not the college game, folks. 355-NFL-1, 800-355-6351.
Well, wait, where in the college game does your conference record only count? I mean, Doesn't your whole record count?
It does.
Except in the conference, you're only judge. Oh, I get it. I see where he's going.
Right.
He is applying the college conference decision making standings procedure.
Again, it goes back to the BCS.
Yeah, exactly. But the polls include your whole record.
Exactly.
But the
conference
standings are only
game.
Your conference record. Blah, 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 you know. After sunrise on the 3rd October, 3rd Saturday of October.
When the temperature is below 49 degrees. All right, let's grab Mac on the north side, who was in Dallas. Mac, how are you tonight?
Yeah, I'm fine, Phillip. What do you think of that stadium?
I didn't like it. I didn't like it at all because it didn't feel like football. It felt dirty. I saw dancing. I saw unbelievable money being spent.
It was like an NBA game.
I saw a video screen where Miles Austin kept appearing and saying, "Come on, I need noise, And I saw people in the fourth quarter sitting there, and every time they put the, you know, and they just sat there and they waved and they smiled. I didn't see any fights. I didn't see anybody throwing anything on the field. I don't think those people give a darn. It was absolutely the most boring stadium I've ever been in. I didn't think much of it at all. I could barely see the field from my seat in the press box. I can't think of a stadium in the league that I wouldn't take over it.
Okay, now that's from a football perspective, just from an architectural perspective.
Oh, yeah, it's fine.
It's amazing.
Yeah, great, yeah. It's a wonder. Wonder of the world. I mean, architectural wonder. But
it doesn't.
I smelled like an office building.
It doesn't have the same feel as, of course, they're not a playoff team, but it doesn't have the same feel as Gillette Stadium in December.
No.
It doesn't have the same feel as...
Doesn't have the same feel as EverBank.
Or, yeah,
I would much rather watch a football game at EverBank Field than watch a game at Dallas Cowboys Stadium.
It is like an NBA game.
I felt dirty there. I felt like I was in a strip joint.
The video board was cool though.
I mean, you know, the dancers in the end zone on the platforms. I mean, what in that HE double hockey sticks was that? I mean, you know, I looked like something from Laugh-In'. Oh, nice go-go boots. You know, I mean, it was just. It was tacky. I mean, they ought to call that place the Tacky Dome.
I will tell you this, though. That video board is overwhelming.
Oh, big deal. I got a TV
like
in my house.
How do
I care about a video board? I want to see a football game.
Right.
I want to smell cigar smoke. I want to smell the grass.
But look, in an age where television runs your game, and they're talking, Goodell was talking to Commissioner in the spring about how you make the experience in the stadium better so that people don't stay home and watch it. That's how they're going to do
it. When
the
novelty wears off, those people aren't coming back. They'll say, yeah, I did that for a couple years. It was nice. I don't want to do it anymore. Because those people aren't fans.
Unless they're not
passionate fans.
Unless they win.
Yeah, unless they win.
And they've got the money.
I'll tell you what, they were winning in the old stadium and they had empty seats.
Well, that has been a myth that is a franchise.
That is not a hotbed of professional football, and it hasn't been for a long time.
Well, I won't argue with you there. I did love that video board, though. Let's take a break. We'll come back. More Jaguars this week with Vic Ketchman, Joe Fortunato, and you right here on News Talk Radio, WOKV. Depend on it.
To talk to Brian, Jeff, and Vic, dial 355-NFL-1 or 1-800-355-NFL-1. Now, back to Jaguars This Week, presented by Aetna on News Talk Radio, WOKV.
Or you can vote for your favorite MVP teacher to be the Community First Credit Union MVP Teacher of the Week. Your teacher could win club seats to a Jaguars game. And, of course, it's all part of that great program, First Down, Touchdown for Teachers. You can find all the details at communityfirstfl.org for details.
All right, so since Mac brought it up, and by the way, we didn't get a chance to hear what Mac thought about the stadium.
Oh,
so if Mac, you want to come back and tell us what you thought about Dallas Cowboys Stadium, we would love to hear it. But since we brought it up, okay, you got me wound up. I'm going to go there.
Okay.
And I'm not going back to Dallas. I'm going to stay right here and talk about EverBank Field, because this is a stadium for which I have developed a strong affection. I like this place. Now, there's some things I would like to change here. I wish we could go back to the beginning.
And blow up.
When they made that horrible decision to leave this upper deck above the west side standing because it had only been erected a few years earlier.
And they wrote $1 million on it.
I thought it was a $5 million note or something.
It was small potatoes.
It was chump change compared to what stadiums cost total. And they elected to keep that upper deck standing, which then determined the configuration of the whole place. Right away, the idea of cantilevering the upper decks, stacking it like they did in Tennessee.
I
love the Tennessee Stadium. It's got that stacked feel where everything is close to the field and on top of each other. We don't have that here. This stadium does what's called yawn. If you stand in the end zone here and look from side to side, this thing really yawns. It's really wide. It's really open. It goes back too far and too quickly. If I could shrink this stadium, that's another mistake.
Right.
The thing was built for the Florida-Georgia game, and that was a huge mistake because Florida-Georgia is one game a year. The Jaguars are supposed to be for a lifetime.
Right.
If you could shrink this stadium and tighten it, I think it would be absolutely fantastic. It's got a beautiful view out to the river. It's got a real football feel to it that I can't explain in any other way. It's got a Southern football feel to it. It's got a good college feel to it, and that's good for a town that's embraced college football, that's been raised on college football. You know, it's got the kind of college feel to it that you can transfer to the professional team, which was a good thing. I just wish it was tighter and smaller, because if it was, I think it would create an atmosphere that would sell itself. Instead of the Jaguars, instead of the performance on the field always having to sell the tickets, sometimes you need the stadium itself and the feeling it promotes, the feeling it gives off, sell those tickets.
I'll remember.
Joe wants to say something.
Okay.
You know what you're describing.
What am I describing?
Heinz Field.
Well, I'm describing any of the new ballparks, Baltimore, Philadelphia, Pittsburgh, Cincinnati, Cleveland, Chicago. They did a wonderful job in Chicago. They were saddled with a terrible, terrible challenge there. They had to build the new stadium on the old Soldier Field footprint, which was a very small footprint. That's why Soldier Field has the smallest blackout number in the league, I believe. Everbank Field has the second smallest blackout number in the league. That's also why the new Soldier Field looks like a spaceship from the outside has crashed, you know, into the earth. But inside, it's sensational. It's really stacked on top of each other, and it rises quickly, and it's really intimate. All of the new ballparks, with the exception of the one in Dallas, I love.
What did you think of Arrowhead Stadium? What they did with it?
I like it. I really, really like it. I'm not going to say I love it because I don't think they got their money's worth.
Did you see the AFL Hall of Fame in their,
no,
in their clubs?
No, no,
and,
I know, man, that I need
to
see more.
Great job with that.
But Arrowhead has always been great. It's never been anything but great.
Well,
so it's hard to abandon a place that good.
Well, here's the point I'm
making.
Like
they did Giants Stadium, well, which is a disgrace.
And that's where I'm going. They spent darn near $2 billion on the stadium in Washington, or New York, which we'll see later this month.
Yeah, but it's New York.
I know. And I understand what, you know, the union costs and all those things drive it higher. But here's my point. Don't you think the people in New York are looking at what they did in Kansas City and thinking, maybe we should have done that? Because the bones of Giant Stadium are very similar to Arrowhead.
Mm-hmm.
You could have built clubs around it and raised the press box, mm-hmm. which they had already done. That seems like, especially in this economy, it seems like they made a big mistake.
Yeah. Well, I haven't been to the new one yet, but I mean, old Giant Stadium was just sensational. I don't even know why the heck you would have to abandon it.
Just do what they did in Kansas City,
yeah,
which
exactly,
is retrofit it, put
exactly.
the clubs outside of it.
But all the new ones I love. The one in Philadelphia, the Link, is sensational. Heinz Field is sensational. Tennessee, I dearly love. I just love the ballpark in Nashville. Baltimore
favorites.
Is sensational. Cleveland, Cincinnati, even Cincinnati. I mean, you know, where they put in seats, the olive drab seats, you know, to save money.
Yeah.
You know, Mike Brown, of course. Hey, once you get past the olive drab color of the seats, the stadium's fantastic. I mean, I'm sorry. I think they laid an egg in Dallas.
What'd you think of Seattle when we were
love
last
it.
Year?
Absolutely love it. It has a tight feel, and the view to downtown Seattle and out into Puget Sound is fantastic. The one in Denver, I love. And it doesn't have a lot of design to it, but that's what I love about yeah. it. It's a copy of Old Mile High.
You know, and they did little things like they ribbed, you know, the upper deck to
yeah.
make it look like mountains.
But they stacked, that's right, yeah. but they stacked it. You know, it's the top deck is stacked on the lower deck all the way around and get it as tight as possible. But as soon as I walked into Invesco in Denver, the first thing I said is, this is like Old Mile High
yep.
with a facelift,
yep.
which is exactly what I wanted it to be because I loved Old Mile High.
They took it off the steel superstructure and they just put it in concrete.
Man, these companies like the one out of Kansas City, what is it,
Okay. HOK is the architecture
right.
firm.
These new architectural firms that do these stadiums are just fantastic. They do sensational work.
All right, folks, we have reached the end of hour number one. Hour number two is next after the news on News Talk Radio, WOKV. Depend on it.
To talk to Brian, Jeff, and Vic, dial 355-NFL-1 or 1-800-355-NFL-1. Now, back to Jaguars This Week, presented by Aetna on News Talk Radio WOKV.
Well, when the Jaguars win, folks, everyone wins. At Sonny's Real Pit Barbecue, you'll get a free barbecue pork sandwich with your game day ticket stub on a Monday or Tuesday after the Jaguars win a home game at all participating North Florida Sonny's Real Pit Barbecue Restaurant. Brian Sexton, Vic Ketchman with you.
One more thing on the stadium.
Sure.
This is Vic Ketchman saying this on, what is it, November it's the 3rd, the year 2010.
7:06:41.
Right? Okay. What's going to happen here is this franchise is going to keep rooting itself. It's going to dig in, work hard, sell more tickets, stay alive. And as it does that, this building's going to get older. And then one day, it's going to build a new stadium just for the Jaguars. It's going to be an intimate facility just for the Jaguars. And then this franchise is going to pop. When that day happens, then this place is going to pop.
Now, you know everybody who calls is going to say, when is that day going to happen?
I don't know. I'll be dead, so it doesn't matter.
So that's that far in the future? Are you telling
I'll
us that you have
dead,
a short lifespan?
I'll be
now?
Long gone. You know,
yeah. I think the long
someone else will be covering the team.
You'll be on a mountaintop playing golf somewhere.
Maybe, but you know, I won't be covering the team.
All right, your schedule guy.
Yeah,
you talk about schedule all the time.
I think schedules are big.
Since we're at the bye week, can we look at the final eight games?
Please do.
All right, for the Jaguars, and I'll run through this, and then I'll get your analysis. Obviously, you've got Houston and Cleveland at home.
Must win both of those games
okay.
to be a serious playoff contender.
Then you have a really rough patch now because you go to New York to take on the Giants, and they look really good all of a sudden, and then you go to Tennessee.
If you're going to steal one on the road, that's the one.
Okay.
Tennessee.
Why do you say that? Just they're not as good as people think they are?
They're going to have it in their mind how they just kicked you all over the dirt, and by then you're going to be a better football team than that.
All right. Then – Oakland at home at Indianapolis. That's not an easy stretch because Oakland showing signs of life.
There's no question. They've scored 97 points, I think, in the last 2 weeks.
Yeah.
All right. Must beat Oakland. I won't write them off in Indianapolis, but that's a tall order.
Then Washington at home and at Houston.
You got to win both of those. So my formula for making the playoffs is win the next two, win at Tennessee. Of course, these are division game, so I'm picking them, obviously, for that reason. Oakland, Washington, and at Houston. If you win those games, those are all those division games or AFC games, too, of course, you're going to be in good shape for the tiebreaker.
All right, characterize it, you know.
I just don't see this team
easy,
winning.
Hard.
I don't see this team winning in New York against a team that can really rush the passer. We know the formula for David Garrard playing well is give him time to throw.
Right, set his feet.
And that's going to be very difficult against the Giants. So I'm not as hopeful for a win in New York as I am for a win in Tennessee.
All right, characterize it. Demanding schedule, you know, moderate schedule, what do you think?
Oh, no, this is a killer schedule unless Houston goes face up. Cleveland, hold on, folks. Don't think for 1 second. If they get DeLome or Seneca Wallace back so that they have a real pro quarterback under center for that game, let's not forget they just won in New Orleans. Let's not forget that they've got a rusher, Peyton Hillis, who can pound out yardage.
Right.
So they're
and they beat you pretty good in the season finale last year.
The Jaguars will probably be a 1 or 2 point favorite against Houston. I'm going to guess.
Yeah.
They'll probably be a 3 or 4 point favorite against Cleveland. Not that any of that matters, but it's not as though they're going to be a 2 touchdown favorite against anybody.
Let's talk about the Colts schedule. Go through the division here real quick.
Okay.
They are right now 5-2.
Mm-hmm.
They have a trip to Philly that you said you think they lose.
Yes.
Home against Cincinnati.
Mm-hmm. I think they'll win at home against Cincinnati.
At New England?
Oh, no. They're not getting out of New England alive. Not this time.
San Diego at home?
San Diego plays them tough. I mean, they beat them like a drum. That's going to be a tough one.
Dallas at home?
Well, Dallas is their worst team in the league right now.
At Tennessee?
No, Tennessee will. Do you remember last year Indianapolis played at Tennessee when Tennessee was in that mode where they gave up 49 points in the first half at New England? And then the Jaguars got him the next week and I think laid 40-something on them, 47 or something like that. And then the week after that, Indianapolis just put a thumping on them in Tennessee. No, that won't happen this time. They'll remember that.
We talked about Jacksonville. That's, you know, you can see the Jaguars play well up there in that building. At Oakland?
Well, you know, I mean, you got a cornerback like Asamoah.
Nnamdi Asamoah.
Asamoah, okay. Great player. You got a cornerback like that, and the Raiders have scored, I think, 97 points in the last couple of weeks. They're putting points on the board.
Sure are.
Who knows? The Raiders could end up being a surprise team of the year if Campbell continues to play like this. They've got the defense to do it.
And then they finish against the Tennessee Titans.
You know, I really think the Titans have the muscle to beat the Colts up twice. Titans are the team. In my opinion, the Titans are the team to watch in this division.
All right. We talked a little bit about the Texans, but let's go back there for just a moment. And they obviously have San Diego this week, and you've said you think that is...
Just read through the schedule, because they could go bye-bye here. I mean, they've got a killer.
Yeah, it's a rigorous schedule. Listen to this one, folks. You ready? San Diego, at Jacksonville, at the New York Jets, hosting the Tennessee Titans, at the Philadelphia Eagles, hosting the Baltimore Ravens, at the Tennessee Titans, at Denver, and then host the Jaguars.
There may only be a win or two, a two or three wins left in that in the season for the Texans. They are really facing the tallest order in the division. And, you know, it's got to start wearing out for Gary Kubiak.
You know, he is under fire this week.
It's got to be.
For his play calling.
I mean, they coached like crap. I mean, they did not have that team ready to play a primetime game. That team was not ready to go.
I'm going to have to call it out week by week here because the Titans website does not throw its schedule up like the others do. So let's go to the Titans are off this week, and then the Titans. Where's Tennessee? They're at Miami.
That's going to be a tough one. That's a tough one. Miami is a much, much underrated team. The problem with the Dolphins is Henny's throwing too many interceptions. He does a lot of good things. He throws a lot of beautiful passes. He moves them, but he's throwing too many interceptions. At some point, the light has to go on, and he's got to start throwing the ball away. He's got to avoid these interceptions. If he does that, look out for the Dolphins. They could be a late-season bloomer.
Then they host Washington.
Okay, they'll handle them.
Then they're at Houston. Then they host the Jaguars.
Uh-huh.
Then, where are they? Then they have the Colts in that home game. We talked about that when we talked about the Colts schedule. Then Tennessee hosts Houston.
Mm-hmm.
Then they're at Kansas City.
Mm-hmm.
And then they're at Indianapolis.
The Titans are the team to beat.
Okay.
I like that schedule the best because it's loaded with division games. And I just, when I hear the teams roll off, I like that schedule better than anybody's.
All right. 355-NFL-1, 355-6351. Let's grab Doug down in St. John's County next. Hello, Doug. Welcome to the show.
Hey, guys, I've been listening to you for quite a while, and first time I ever called in, but I really enjoy your analysis every Monday and Tuesday, all week, you know.
Thank you.
Yeah. Hey, I wanted to do two things. The first thing on those stadiums, I tell you, those old cookie-cutter stadiums like Riverfront and Three Rivers Stadium and stuff, and Veterans.
Bush Stadium.
Those were actually, they were fun places to watch football because if you got to the upper deck, you could watch every play develop. And people would never move down in Cincinnati to get a more expensive seat because you didn't see the game develop as well.
I'll tell you something what people don't realize about those stadiums you're talking about, Bush, Three Rivers, Riverfront, the Vet in Philadelphia. They were multipurpose stadiums that were basically built for the baseball team had the upper hand in the construction of them because the baseball team was the main tenant. They were going to play 81 games in that stadium every year, whereas the football team was only going to play 10. Actually, when they were built, it was 8 because there were 14 regular season games and 2 preseason games. So, yeah. Help me out. 9.
Right.
Is that right? 9. Yeah.
Yeah, they had
72. Yeah.
Yeah.
So they were going to play 9 when those things were built. The crazy part is that after they built them and started playing games in them, it was the baseball people who complained and the football people said this is just fine. As it turned out, they were better football viewing facilities than they were baseball ballparks. The Steelers never had a problem with Three Rivers Stadium. Rooney's kind of sat back quietly and with a smile on their face as the thing was being designed and built because they realized it was the bull in the ring that they wanted for football, but yet it was the Pirates who were doing all the designing. So baseball kind of screwed itself on those, and that's probably the bigger reason why they disappeared.
Yeah, that's true. And then football had an upper hand after that in the 90s. Hey, let me ask you about scouting, guys. And I just know this because I grew up in Cincinnati, and they have, you know, basically one guy head of scouting. He's been there since the team's been there. Mike Brown says his assistant coach is out. His daughter is a lawyer and does all the contracts.
Katie Blackburn, yeah.
And he does all the personnel. Mm-hmm. And then, you know, then you just went over the Jakes whole thing, and I didn't realize that, you know, they got the whole scouting normal department and the GM and everything. But do you think scouting has gone down? Because the Bengals haven't done much better than the Jaguars, or maybe even worse because we have so many number one picks. Neither team's done well in the draft. Do you kind of think that the ESPNs and all the overanalysis and all the hype that they give players in college, you know, on TV for the last 20 years?
Man, is he playing right into your hands, Vic?
Yeah, I'm just going to stop him, and I'm going to go because I know where you're going, and I think I can get there faster and more effectively, to the point.
Thank you.
By the way, real quick, before you say that, Doug, hold on the line when we're done. You've just won 20 Jaguar scratch-off tickets from the Florida Lottery.
Awesome, man.
All right.
Awesome.
To play the Jaguars scratch-off game, visit a Florida Lottery retailer near you. Sorry, Vic, but I wanted to get that in before you hung up. Please.
The big criticism of the Bengals always has been, and this goes back to the days when Mike Brown's father, Paul Brown, owned the team and coached the team. Paul Brown is the guy who laid this foundation of scouting. He didn't have a scouting department that was much more than a couple office people, a couple scouts, that special scouts he sent out to look at this guy or look at that guy. Paul Brown believed in having the coaches do the scouting. Kenny Anderson could tell you all about this. Kenny Anderson was coaching there. He was scouting. Now, here's the complaint with the Bengals scouting department, meaning here's the complaint about coaches doing the scouting. Scouts like players who look good in the shower, all right? Coaches like players who have good technique. The scouts will tell you when you get a guy who has good technique, that's as good as he's going to get.
Right.
All right. The scouts will tell you that you got to get the guy who looks good in the shower, all right, and then teach him technique, and that'll make him a better player. He's got the physical ability to have upside beyond where he is. That's always been the rub for the criticism of the Bengals' personnel ways. Now, once upon a time, Mike Brown was outstanding. He was a great talent evaluator. That's what he did for his daddy. He was his father. He was Paul Brown's main scout. Mike Brown was the guy who saw something in Pete Johnson when nobody else saw it. Everybody else saw an overweight, flabby, can only run between the tackles guy. And Mike Brown saw a pro football runner. And he became a very good player. Same thing with Icky Woods. Mike Brown saw it. Nobody else did. Same thing with the guy from Jacksonville, Booby Clark. All right. Mike Brown found him at, I think, Bethune-Cookman. And when nobody else saw him, Mike Brown, once upon a time, was a fantastic bird dog. But they've never had the department that you need to be competitive with the other team's personnel departments. Also, the Bengals, once upon a time, there was no roster limit as far as what you took to training camp. You could take 250 guys, which the Cowboys routinely did.
Right.
Steelers would take 150, 130. Bengals were always 80, 85. They weren't willing to pay the free agent, you know, the money to the undrafted free agent guys who were going to just get a couple grand, $5,000, and then get cut. They weren't willing to look to spend that money to find a diamond in the rough.
Appreciate the phone call. We are way overdue for a break. 355-NFL-1. There you go. We'll return right after this on News Talk Radio WOKV. Depend on it.
To talk to Brian, Jeff, and Vic, dial 355-NFL-1 or 1-800-355-NFL-1. Now, back to Jaguars This Week, presented by Aetna on News Talk Radio WOKV.
Jaguars fans, be sure to check out the Fan Zone section of Jaguars.com and see how you can win Jaguars tickets, plus some great Jaguars merchandise. Look for the list of participating Parts House Car Care Centers. The Parts House, official sponsor of the Jacksonville Jaguars, Sexton, Ketchman, Fortunato, and Eric, joining us from Norfolk, Virginia. Hello, Eric.
Hey, guys. Love the show, by the way. Just put that out there. I had a comment and a question. First, I'll start with a comment. It's really directed towards Vic. I was reading Ask Vic this afternoon, and you really had you couldn't have put the ticket situation in Jacksonville any better than what you did with the whole Save the Whale comment you had. And I was wondering if you could just kind of make a Jaguars This Week version for all the people that don't read Ask Vic. I thought that was beautiful.
Okay.
And
there are people that don't read Ask Vic.
I want you guys really to talk a little bit about the D-line. I thought Austin Lane really had some great plays in there. Tyson showed that he's not a reach at number 10. I really think they were getting pressure up there all day, and just wanted to hear you guys' thoughts on it, and I'll take it off the air.
Well, I'll start with the what I was asked to do in Ask Vic today. Someone said, would you please give us a State of the Whale address, which is a way of saying where do we stand as far as selling tickets for the remainder
of the
season. The
overall health of the franchise.
Yeah, exactly. That's better put. And I characterized it this way. You know, during the offseason, the Whale was on the beach, and he was barely breathing. And then Baselli
drug him out by his tail.
Boy, he grabbed that whale by the tail, him and all those other Team Teal people, and they dragged the big beast into the water.
Do we have a Moby Dick moment coming?
And they dragged him into the water, and they, you know, rubbed his belly, and he started to take a few breaths. And next thing you know, he's swimming. And through the first half of the season, the whale is swimming freely, and he's swimming happily. Everything looks fine, except the doggone thing won't leave the shallow water.
Yeah.
You know, he won't go out into the deep water and swim with the other whales. And that's what has to happen here. We've got to get that whale. We've got to push that whale out to sea. Get him in the deep water.
Herman Melville couldn't say it any better.
Which means that's a metaphor, folks, for saying we got four games, home games left in this season. We're halfway through. And it would be a terrible, terrible shame to waste the efforts of all of the people, all of those Team Teal people, who labored so hard and were so dedicated to saving this animal, and have him breathing and swimming and looking fine. It would be such a shame to waste that effort by going dead in the last 2 months of the season. And most of all, I'm afraid that if this doggone thing washes up onto the beach again, we're not going to be able to save him.
Right.
And this time he'll perish. So that's my State of the Whale address. And yes, I know it's corny, it's hokey.
It works,
but it's you know, a way of saying we got four games left and we got to fill this building. We got to get him on TV. Got to avoid the blackout stigma. Have to avoid the blackout stigma.
Hey, Eric in Norfolk, you already hung up, but call back because you're the Metro PCS caller of the week, and Joe will tell you how you're going to receive a Jaguars prize pack. Remember, with no signed contracts, Metro PCS lets you unlimit yourself. He wanted to talk about the defensive line, which really has become a shining star for this franchise.
Yep. We had, on Sunday, the Jaguars had six starters on defense who are first- or second-year players. That's Austin Lane, Terrence Knighton, and Tyson Alualu on the defensive line. Three of the four starting defensive linemen, Campman's the senior, the elder statesman, of course, are first and second year players. Now, here's what I liked about Lane. He's got a big motor. He's got a real high revving motor, and I saw him flash across a block and make a tackle for a loss, and it was quick, and it was athletic, and it was decisive. You see, the thing, though, that keeps coaches from selling out to a guy like this is, if you go back to the second play of the game, they ran right at him, and they creased him for a 7-yard gain. The guy just popped it. Boom! Because Austin did something wrong. He got caught with wrong technique or took a wrong route. Something happened, got on a wrong shoulder, and it's a mistake. And in this case, it was a quick 7-yard burst. But if something happens where you get that safety out of position, that's a touchdown. And these coaches live in fear of the big play. When you have too many young players on the field at the same time, you are vulnerable to the big play. So what you're going to see is Austin Lane is going to play a little here and play a little there, I think. But I don't think they're ready to pronounce him, proclaim him the starter.
No, but since you mentioned the safeties, I thought Courtney Green, and it was confirmed by a couple of different people, played pretty well.
Yeah, Green is ahead of Carey.
Yeah.
You know,
although Carey made some plays.
Yeah. Green was playing in San Diego in game two of the season.
Yeah.
So he's had more time, and he's a more physical guy, probably a better tackler. He's ahead of Carey. And all appearances are that, you know, Green might be the guy. There's the
really
possibility that he may be the guy. And if something was to happen, that the light went on for Carey. Woo-hoo.
Yeah, well, I was told that Carey made some plays. I mean, he flashed.
He's better in coverage than he is in run support.
Absolutely. But then you need a strong safety and a free safety.
That's what the free safety is supposed to be. He's supposed to be better in coverage. The strong safety is supposed to be better in run support.
From Norfolk State, they drafted a first-round pick in Reggie Nelson, and he never evolved. And yet they've got a guy that they think maybe they can from Norfolk State.
Mm-hmm.
You find football players where you find football players, eh, Vic Bo?
Yeah, that's another question I got to ask Vic today. Someone talking about the Cowboys having all big school players and the Jaguars small school. Well, let me tell you something. The Cowboys in the old days
were
the kings.
Where's that Too Tall Jones from?
Eastern Kentucky, right?
No, East Tennessee State.
East Tennessee State, yeah. I'm sorry. But, I mean, Hollywood Henderson was from Langston, and Cliff Harris was from Wachita Baptist. And Jethro Pugh was from West Texas A&M or something, and Dwayne Thomas was a East Texas, West Texas guy. Yeah. I mean, they had tons of small college guys. So don't give me that big school stuff. You find them wherever they are.
All right, folks, visit Sports Mania for your chance to win the ultimate Jaguars game day experience. That's a limo ride, club seats, and Sky Lounge tailgate party passes for the Jaguars-Texans game. You can register for free at your closest Sports Mania here in Jacksonville. News is next on News Talk Radio, WOKV. Depend on it.
To talk to Brian, Jeff, and Vic, dial 355-NFL1 or 1-800-355-NFL1. Now, back to Jaguars This Week, presented by Aetna on News Talk Radio, WOKV.
23 minutes left in Jaguars This Week, presented by Aetna, live from the Jaguars radio studios inside Everbank Field. Brian Sexton, the senior editor, Jaguars.com. Vic Ketchman and Joe Fortunato here. Hope Loggy's enjoying his evening up in the woods. Maybe getting wet, too. It's supposed to be raining.
One of the big issues, maybe the top issue of the first half of the season, is the Jaguars' inconsistency. Now, I've got some thoughts on that.
Okay.
Because, frankly, I don't think they have been inconsistent. If you throw out the Indianapolis game and just use the other seven, and I say throw out the Indianapolis game because the Jaguars play them tough all the time. They play them twice a year. They know them. They know how to play them, etc. And it was here, of course. If you take the other seven games and study them, what you'll see very simply is that they beat all the bad teams. They lost to all the good teams. And they tended to beat up on the bad teams,
right,
and tended to get beat up by the good teams. And when they played San Diego was considered to be one of the elite teams in the league. All right. So there's a consistency within that. I mean, there's a theme there.
No, you're right.
And
beating the teams they're supposed to beat.
And see, the real problem, the reason that this great inconsistency appears. The reason there appears to be this great inconsistency is because there is such a great extreme of teams the Jaguars have played in the first half of the season. For instance, they played Indianapolis. I'm sorry, I said throw out the Indianapolis game. They played Philadelphia. They played Tennessee and San Diego. All right, Philadelphia and Tennessee are high in the power rankings. Of course, so is Indianapolis. But I said, throw that one out. The three teams other than Indianapolis, the Jaguars beat, Dallas, Denver, and Buffalo, are at the bottom of the standing, so to speak, of the power ranking, so to speak. You've got this extreme. When the Jaguars played the Eagles were hot. They were on fire. Michael Vick was on fire. When the Jaguars played the Chargers,
it was at home, their home opener.
Yes, exactly, and that was
West Coast.
Exactly, and that's a team that, as I said,
powerful
team, an elite team that, who knows, before this year is up, they could go back to that elite status. What we're going to see in the second half of the season is they're going to play more of the same kind of team. Not as many top five teams and bottom five teams, but a lot more in that top 15 category.
The guys who are fighting for position.
Yeah, we're going to see a lot of teams that are going to be, you know, 10 to 15 in that category.
Right.
They're going to be challenged greatly, but we're not going to get that extreme. I think this inconsistency we're seeing is a product of the extreme of the teams they're playing.
All right, well, the inconsistency then can only be described in one position, and that's the quarterback position, because the numbers say he has been.
Yeah, well, right? You know, Philadelphia.
4 wins, 139.5 passer rating, 12 touchdowns, only one pick, 3 losses that he started, 34.7 passer rating, 1 touchdown, 6 interceptions.
Yeah, you know, Philadelphia, Tennessee, big blitz teams, big pressure teams. They, especially Tennessee, they know the formula for beating David Garrard. Rush him. Get pressure on him. Get people in his face. He doesn't play well when he's rushed. Most quarterbacks don't. There are a few like Ben Roethlisberger who don't have a problem with it. They seem to flourish in that. The more you rush them, the better they play. That is not David Garrard. David Garrard needs time to feel comfortable, to survey the field. He's not a get-the-ball-out-quickly guy. Therefore, he needs more time to throw. The Titans see that. They know that. Therefore, they try to decrease his time. It's logic. The Eagles saw it, and they were able to do that, too. Chargers rushed him pretty good, too, did they not?
They did.
I mean, I don't know.
That's their personality, for
that's
sure.
Their personality, too. And
Cowboys tried to.
Yep. And who's the fourth game and the fourth loss I'm missing? Kansas City.
Right.
Well, of course, he didn't play that game. That's why doesn't apply.
Yeah,
but I just think you're seeing extremes here. Philadelphia and Tennessee being the extreme to the good side, and Buffalo and Dallas being the extreme to the downside. And I don't think it's inconsistency as much as it is playing to the, you know, for years and years, people used to say about the Jaguars, they play to the level of their competition. Not this year.
Right.
They have not played up to the level of the competition they have faced in the good teams other than Indianapolis.
And they've played above the level of the bad teams.
Exactly. They have not played to the level of their competition this year. The Jaguars have played to the level of themselves.
Okay, so what should everyone listening take away from what you've just said? That this is a team that is improving because they're not playing down to the level, but they're not quite built enough to play up.
True 4-4 middle-of-the-road team that's arrow is pointing up.
Right.
I don't expect them to go down in the second half of the season. I expect them to go up. But as it stands right now, they are a true middle-of-the-road team. They whip the bad teams. They get whipped by the good teams.
355-NFL-1. Wes joins us from Middleburg with a thought on the defensive line. Wes, good evening. Welcome to the program.
Brian, Vic, good evening, boys. Good
Hello.
Job as always.
Hello.
Hello.
Hey, listen, guys, just a comment. When I watched Freeney on Monday night, he's trying to get off the lineman as quickly as possible. He's putting that spin move on. He's bull rushing to get him off balance so he can get to the quarterback. When I watch Kempman, he's kind of doing the same thing. He's trying to get off that block as quick as possible to get to the quarterback, but we imported him. But I'm telling you guys, when I watch our linemen and our linebackers, when they blitz, they're like trying to go at the lineman, and they just keep going at the lineman and going at the lineman. And I hate to like pile on Derek Harvey, but he's a perfect example. I've seen instances this year where he just keeps going at the lineman, and if he literally had just stopped, turned to his right, took 2 steps, he'd have sacked the quarterback. So are our guys just incapable of getting this little concept that the goal is to get off the lineman and get to the quarterback as quickly as possible?
We need Jeff here. I mean, you're into technique now. I mean, I can tell you that Derek Harvey – one of the criticisms of Derek Harvey is that he has a very, very short repertoire, a very small repertoire of moves, so to speak. And that won't work. You've got to have a lot of different things you can do so you keep that blocker, that tackle, off balance. Kempman can do a lot of things. Freeney can do a lot of things. They all live in fear of the spin move, but he doesn't give you the spin move every time. He'll bull you. He'll try to beat you off the edge with the first step. then he'll try to club you, then he'll try to a swim move. And, you know, now you've seen the swim move, the club move, you've seen the edge rush, you've seen the bull rush, and you figure, well, it's got to be coming here. It's got to be coming. The spin's got to be coming. Next thing you know, here it is, boom.
Right.
And you're not ready for it, and he's by you. But the thing is, you've lived in fear of the spin move, and you're only getting it one out of every six rushes. So everyone has their signature move. Derek Harvey doesn't have a signature move.
And the word, if
that's
you listen,
the problem.
You're right. You're absolutely right. And the word that if you listen, Wes, you'll hear Jeff use the most about Harvey is awareness. He doesn't have much awareness when it comes to where the quarterback is and what he's doing.
But what I'm trying to tell you guys is it's like they're not interested in that. They just want to go at the lineman. I mean, when you watch the linebackers blitz, they're trying to find a lineman to get to instead of going trying to get right to the quarterback and shoot the gap. It's like I don't really understand it, guys. I'm not trying to be a bad guy here, but it's just like they don't get the concept of trying to get off the block.
Yeah,
and the
Wes,
quarterback, they're just going at the lineman, and they keep going and going and going.
Do you know how we know he doesn't get the concept? He got benched.
Yeah, I know, but there's other guys, Dick. I'm just saying they all seem, except for Campbell, they just seem focused on trying to get
the other guys are young. I mean, he's half a season in professional football. Austin Lane, he saw his first real action on Sunday.
And Terrence Knighton's not getting off blocks. He's pushing them.
Yeah, you know, Knighton is never going to be a move guy. He's just going to be a boot up your butt kind of football player. Larry Hart has to be a guy who's going to have a lot of moves. He's going to have a lot of technique because he's going to be a finesse pass rusher. Yeah, I know he's strong. They say he's strong, but Larry Hart isn't going to live on the bull rush. He's got to have a lot of finesse in his game.
And you know that Joe Cullen is working on that.
Oh, they got the best. Joe Cullen
That's
is the best.
Thing.
I mean, you know. When they hired Joe Cullen, everyone knows the issue that came with it. Of course, they were absolutely satisfied that was in the past. But do you have any idea how good you have to be at your craft to overcome that kind of an issue?
Well, if you watched him during training camp, you could see.
I mean, to overcome that kind of setback, to overcome that kind of blot on your resume,
yeah.
You have to be so doggone good at what you do. People say, I don't care. Get this guy.
Right. And, by the way, it helps when Roger Goodell stands up for you to tell you what kind of a coach you are.
Well, it's because Joe did it the right way.
Sure
he made amends for what he did.
Right. And he is a terrific football coach.
He sure is.
We need to take a break. We'll come back with one more segment of this fine radio program on a wet and rainy Wednesday. You're listening to Jaguars This Week, presented by Aetna on News Talk Radio WOKV. Depend on it.
To talk to Brian, Jeff, and Vic, dial 355-NFL-1 or 1-800-355-NFL-1. Now, back to Jaguars This Week, presented by Aetna on News Talk Radio WOKV.
Welcome back. 8 minutes left to go in the program and a couple of phone calls. Let's do it. Aaron is in Mandarin. Hello, Aaron. Welcome to the show.
Hello, gentlemen. How are we doing?
Good. Excellent.
All right, great. Vic, I now pronounce you GM Vic. GM Gene needed a leave of absence. And we have the 12th pick in the draft.
Okay.
Probably outside of where you need to be to get the guy you want as the quote-unquote franchise quarterback.
No, there'll be a quarterback on the board somewhere near that pick, near that part in the order. I mean, we're looking at probably five or six guys who are going to be selected in the first round, and they're not all going to be taken in the first five, six picks. You probably have a couple guys at the top, depending on whether or not Andrew Luck comes out. I can't imagine why he would,
sure.
Because he looks like the first pick of the draft. Depending on, you know, Locker, if he's got such an awful team around him that it might hurt him. But when Locker gets to the combine, when he gets to the individual workouts and he starts knocking their eyes out with his physical ability, he'll shoot back up. You're going to have some guys in the middle of the first round, maybe a Christian Ponder, maybe a Pat Devlin. I'm just throwing names out there. You may have some guys later in the first round. If they come out, I don't even know what their status is. Is Dalton a senior?
He is.
Okay, he's a senior. Enderley from Idaho is another candidate. You're going to have
you got seven guys right now. You've got Andrew Luck, Jake Locker, Dalton. Is it? It's Andrew Dalton.
Andy Dalton.
Yeah. Ryan Mallett.
Yeah, Mallett. Forgot all about him.
Pat Devlin, Nathan Eberle, Enderle, and Christian Ponder.
Christian Ponder, and don't forget about Terrell Pryor if he decides to come out. I don't think he should, and I frankly don't think he will.
Isn't he? I mean, I hate to make a bad comparison here, but isn't he right now sort of like Vince Young?
Well, he is Vince Young.
Yeah,
he's the second coming of Vince Young. He needs another year, in my opinion. But this is a great crop. So go ahead. Do you have is there a punchline to that question?
Well, yeah. My question was, though, I mean, if you only identified, let's say, two or three as what you, in your assessment, thought were the answer,
mm-hmm.
A, what would you do? What would you give up to get that person? And then B, if you couldn't, what would be your next move?
Well, look at Sanchez is the perfect example. The Jets decided he was their guy. I think they were somewhere around 16, 17, and they moved up to four?
Five.
Moved up to five, and I think all they had to do was give up a pick that ended up becoming a center named Mac from California.
He was a really good player.
He was a really good player. But, I mean, they didn't give up much to get up to get Sanchez. Well, you know, it depends on how many places you have to come up. Let's say the Jaguars are drafting 15th, just 16th, just for the heck of it. They're halfway.
Right in the middle.
Right in the middle. Up or down. To go from 16, let's say the guy you want it fits somewhere around 6. To go up 10 spaces, well, obviously you're going to have to switch first round picks. You'll probably have to give your second or third. I think switching ones and giving your two would get it done. What do you think?
Okay.
I mean, I think you're right on.
Isn't that what the Sanchez?
Yeah. But if you want to go up into, you know, the top 10.
That's going
three.
Into the top 10 now.
Right.
People want out of the top 10.
Absolutely.
People that have quarterbacks that don't need quarterbacks
are going to try to bail.
Are going to get out of there so they can get their guy cheaper. And you're fitting yourself to the pick. You're not fitting the pick to you. That's the important thing. You've got to fit yourself to where the pick fits.
Well,
if the pick fits at number 6, then you got to go up there and get him.
Remember, everyone may love Luck and Locker, but it may be a Devlin or a Dalton who's sitting there in the second 10 picks, you know, and Gene and Terry and that crew over there may decide, we like that guy, and stay put. You might not go up.
There's other guys, too. You know, I mean, I haven't assembled my board yet.
But the all-important value board?
Yeah, but I see guys, and they're out-of-the-way guys. You know, there's a... I saw a guy. I think he might have been with Minnesota. I think he was. Good looking arm. You know, he's not. He's going to be a. He's a draftable guy. Probably he's not going to be much more than a fourth, fifth round pick. But he's a big guy with a good looking arm.
Right.
I saw another guy too. The guy from North Carolina. Is it Yates?
I haven't seen North Carolina.
T.J. Yates. Sure. He's got a nice arm and he's a big guy. Well, what's he doing with North Carolina? Well,
here's
it doesn't
one.
Matter. It's how his talent is going to translate to the pro game.
How about the kid at Missouri, Blaine Gabbert?
Oh, I love him. Just love him. 6 foot
he's
five.
Yeah.
Got a nice touch. Got a big arm. Love him. But he's an underclassman.
And if he comes out, I mean, it just further deepens the stock that you've got a quarterback.
I mean, I have to sit down and start.
What about Landry Jones, the kid at Oklahoma? I haven't really seen much of him, but
he's got a buggy whip.
Yeah, looks
like he's got a buggy whip. You know, I wouldn't call him ready, but he's got a buggy whip.
What about the kid at, is it Matt Barkley at USC?
He's got a great looking arm. Yeah. Now, he's a little goofy.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, did you happen to watch the beginning of the Oregon USC game?
I didn't see the beginning, no.
He had the headset on, and he was singing gospel music for the photographers, you know. Nothing wrong with gospel music, but, hey, kid, you got a big game coming up here. I mean, should we be, you know, exhibiting ourselves minutes before kickoff?
Right. No, probably not. But it just goes to show. There's a lot of guys out there, not even counting the underclassmen, and where they might end up. So hang tight.
It's loaded, man. It's loaded. I mean, this class is loaded.
We're going to talk about that ad nauseum in the spring.
Mm-hmm.
Over and over and over. All right, so we've got like 2 minutes left in the show. Pat Devlin at Delaware.
Mentioned him.
Are you a Delaware fan? Are you a blue hen guy?
He's this year's Joe Flacco. But, you know, couldn't get on the field at Pitt. Never played a down.
He's another Pitt guy that transfers to Delaware.
Yeah.
I didn't realize that was the connection.
Yeah, he couldn't get on the field. Couldn't play. Tyler Pelko was the quarterback. And now, look, Flacco is, you know, he's a guy who's competing for the Pro Bowl. He's a guy who's got a team on pace for the Super Bowl. So, I mean, you find football players where you find them. And these scouts, I mean, they beat the bushes. They're out looking for them everywhere.
Hey, in the minute that we have left, I'm watching over your shoulder the NFL Network, and they're showing a play that Ndamukong Suh made this week against the Redskins.
Yeah.
Have you seen anything from the kid that ended up at Tampa, number 3? Why can't I think of his name? The defensive tackle from Oklahoma.
Yeah, I know who you mean. It begins with a W. M.
Yeah.
I just
totally drew a blank. I can't imagine why I can't think of him. Ndamukong Suh.
But I saw the other kid from Oklahoma playing for Washington, the offensive tackle.
Oh, Trent Williams.
Yeah. Oh, man. What a house. Yeah. I mean, he's a masher.
Yeah, he's a really big guy. Yeah, Oklahoma lost 3 players in the first 4 picks in that draft.
Yeah, no, I think I did see the kid play, yes. Of course, we played there. Covered the Jaguars in the preseason against Tampa.
Yeah, and I can't remember his name. It's just...
Yeah, I'm sorry.
Drawing a blank, didn't pay attention. By the way, Adrian Peterson just tweeted that Chris Johnson should be excited to have Randy Moss. Moss is a great teammate. Go figure. That'll do it for our show. Vic, enjoy your bye weekend.
Thank you. You too.
Take care, everybody.
WOKB AM Jacksonville, WOKB FM, Connor Kirby.